I do. I keep saying, like, I think we've said it here on the pod like for the last year, but like this brick stuff is already bigger and is going to continue being bigger and more important than people realize. It's literally going to be a dam break moment.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you what, man. I said that today. I was like, the fact that you've got Turkey literally leaving, what is it, NATO, I guess, or the UN, or
Have they left?
well, no, but basically they would have to join BRICS, and
Yeah.
that, I mean, huge, like huge ramifications. Turkey is not a small place, and it's a very instrumental place geographically because of all the pipelines that run. You know,
Yeah.
I mean, you know better than, probably than I do, even. I mean, there's about a bajillion pipelines that run, you know, from the Middle East up through Turkey.
Oh, and there's one in particular that runs from literally east to west that connects the Middle East to Europe. I think it's the TANAP pipeline.
And man, I'll tell you what, like the fact that you've got that territory now that's going, maybe we're gonna head the BRICS route. People have no idea how significant that is. It's literally going, hey man, we were part of this old system and it has failed. I think, you know, between Western Europe, the United States, and you know, a lot of the other, you know, countries that are out there that are, I guess, a little more indebted to the Federal Reserve and the, you know, IMF and the rest of those, right? Like, I got to imagine, like, this is one of those where it's a domino, and the thing is it's a giant domino. This one is a domino that's going to hit a bunch of other countries that are all part of, you know, the Western Europe, and I think they're going to just start going, yeah man, we're tired of being taken care of. And I think this is where a lot of people get very you know, bullish on Bitcoin, to, you know, to use that term. It's like, as you understand, Turkey's leaving for a harder money. He's like, if they're leaving for a harder money, then man, who's next?
Well,
Because good.
this actually, I had a great like conversation that is relevant with my girlfriend last night because this is giving me goosebumps. But Eric Weinstein went on with Chris Williamson again.
Dark Horse, right? The Dark Horse
So
podcast.
his brother, Brett Weinstein, is Dark
Oh,
Horse.
okay.
But so like Eric Weinstein, I started paying attention to him a couple years ago, and he seemed like he was very he seems like he tends to be very careful about how often and when he goes on podcasts. And he has repeatedly and often gone back to Chris Williams. And this one he came back within a couple months or even a couple weeks, I think, of his last time. And the primary discussion point that started it off was that what Eric said, that he's no longer confident that Donald Trump will be allowed to be president. And that's a very political way of saying that he doesn't think that there is going to be like actual democracy in the US. That's a very political way of saying that.
I don't
Like,
think.
because if you're if by greater means, if like somebody who has gained enough support to get like the Republican Party nomination, if they're not going to allow somebody of that level to get into the presidency by whatever means necessary, like that's not it. That should not be acceptable by the American people. And the reason I bring that up with the whole BRICS situation is that my girlfriend asked last night. She's like, why does this matter to like the like global established order as far as like the economy goes? It's like, well, this is signifying like s extreme threat and weakness to the United States. Right. And the United States is the purveyor of the US dollar, which is 60 to 70% of the global GDP, a global reserve currency, like all this other stuff. Everybody outside of the US is seeing it. Right. And especially the ones that are less indebted, like you were saying earlier, less indebted to the US. They don't have to keep sucking down the Kool-Aid to like justify their situation. They can like observe and assess and see how things are going, which is why El Salvador and Bukele did what they did. But the significant weaknesses and uncertainties with the strength and the health of the U.S. is causing doubt in the U.S. dollar, which causes doubt in the entire economic system of the world right now. Not the entire hyperbole, but you guys get what I'm saying. And the fact now that Turkey, who is like the way I see things of what's going on over on Asia, between Asia and Europe, Turkey has been a very important neutral linchpin in the entire conversation because of the amount of like natural resources that they allow to be brought in to the continent of Europe from Asia. And if Turkey is gonna be flipping, or not even flipping, but choosing a side, that kicks things off into the Rudyard Lynch discussion, which I sent to you guys on the pod, the founders and everything. And he believes that within the next 1 to 5 years, like we will not only see a civil war in the U.S., but he thinks that we will see like the bloodiest conflict that the human species has seen like to date across the world.
Interesting.
Yeah. But that I took us in a super doomer route really, really fast. But I wanted to go down that whole kind of like thought process so people understand it's like, there's a lot of things that are happening all at once, and they're all kind of following the same kind of like wake behind all of these events that are like corresponding. Like the Trump assassination attempt basically didn't happen now. Like everybody's already forgotten.
Yeah, no shit, right? Oh man. Well, let's kick this thing. It's a little after 7. It's just going to be me and Mike tonight. By the way, if you guys are out there and wondering where this is on Twitter, I just got a message from StreamYard here that we have to have a premium account of Hit Up Jordan. And if there's any Bitcoin veterans out there that can get that thing pushed to a premium account, we'll get you paid back because obviously it's cutting our reach here fairly significantly.
How much does Restream or does StreamYard cost per month?
Oh, I don't, off the top of my head, I have no idea.
Okay. We can talk about it afwards. Like, yeah, I get.
No, it's not StreamYard that needs a premium. It's our Twitter account needs to be premium.
Oh, I can do that. I'll take care of that.
No, yeah, I was just gonna have him do it while we were on, so that everybody could see it. But
okay.
let's go. Hold on to your butts. Welcome to Bitcoin Veterans, everybody. I'm Shane Hazel. I'm joined by my buddy Mike Hobart tonight. Everybody else is out, and we've got a little bit of technical issue going on, but that's not going to stop the show. We are Bitcoiners. We're veterans. If you're not catching this live, that's because we don't have a premium Twitter account for whatever reason. And Twitter's not broadcasting it as per, but we're going to try to get that rectified here in the middle of the show at some point. If anybody's out there that does have access to the Twitter account, or we can contact somebody, please get that thing updated. We'll get you paid back and we'll get the show going. But we're Bitcoin veterans. We're Bitcoiners. We're veterans. Very self-explanatory. Maybe not so self-explanatory is what we're doing. We're trying to give everybody that is a veteran, that is possibly even in another sense of purpose after figuring out just absolutely how corrupt the military industrial complex is and how cankerous the mission sets are for a despotic world type of globalist. We've taken the initiative here within the Bitcoin community as veterans to start putting people back on mission. And I heard this the other day is, you know, giving people a mission or a passion is probably one of the greatest gifts you could possibly give somebody. So you're all welcome. Nope. You're all welcome for Bitcoin veterans. No, it's an honor to be part of this group and to be, you know, part of the voices of it where we get to come out here. But this is just a small part. What we've got going on behind the scenes, is now hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of guys that are working, and gals for that matter, that are working behind the scenes to create not only a parallel economy, but a parallel structure that is reinforced by positive incentives that Bitcoin delivers. And so if you're new to Bitcoin and you don't understand just exactly how far this goes, they say, you know, come for the savings and stay for the revolution. But we're going to help you guys understand that, you know, what we're about. It's absolutely freedom maximalist, you know, freedom of speech, the right to redress your government, the right to keep and bear arms, the right to your person, property and effects, the right to trials by juries of your peers, you name it, and all the things that are not enumerated in the Constitution. That's what we are about here at Bitcoin Veterans. And me and Mike are going to get into some stuff, kind of the arc of this show, if you guys don't know or you haven't seen it yet. We kind of start off in places that are you know, the news cycle sometimes when it's just us, and it gets kind of dark. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, you got to identify the problems, you got to talk about how absolutely terrible it could be, and then, you know, start providing solutions that help either, you know, make those things not happen or mitigate them to the point where the least amount of people that are affected by force and coercion, you know, that's got to be the end goal. But
we're taking up the masculine mantle, right? Like, you have to talk about the stuff that people don't want to talk about if you want to be able to avoid the situations that people don't want to be in. And we're people have already, like, if you haven't noticed that we're dealing with some things right now that we could have never imagined we'd be dealing with 4 or 5 years ago,
yeah.
Like, that means that we're going somewhere that you can't imagine that we could have been 4 or 5 years ago. Like,
yeah.
That right there, like, just the fact that things have changed so drastically that you could never imagine living in a time where you're dealing with the things that are happening right now. Like, change begets change. So, like, we're here to shine the light on the cockroaches and the cracks so that we can start, like, you know, if we have to do pest control or, you know,
yeah,
rebuild the frame of the structure or whatever, like, we're going to get it done.
Yeah. I totally think that this type of group, it doesn't take a large number of these types of individuals to make a giant difference, not only in local communities, but around the country and possibly even around the world.
That's the best part, right? I mean, like, we've all worked on teams. Most teams, okay, the most effective teams, everybody works really hard and everybody pulls their weight for the most part. Most teams, though, there's one person that does the majority of the work.
Yeah.
Right?
That's very true.
So, like, we're basically establishing ourselves, like, if you're a part of Bitcoin Veterans, you're that one person that is getting that stuff done, because the rest of the groups are just kind of like, they would rather keep drinking the Kool-Aid or not talk about what they need to talk about in order to make the decisions that they need to make to get the success that they ultimately want, but they can't have because they're avoiding the reality that's right in front of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, give a little cliffhanger right before here, before we cut to a sponsor and pay the bills, that this is a team. And, you know, this team, nobody's getting paid on this team. They all do it out of the goodness of their heart. And because I think they are men. And I saw something the other day that it's like, hey, you know, the guys with the super high T, those are the guys that are willing to say what needs to be said in the face of the mob, the sheep that are out there, to help, you know, protect and save as many of those, you know, people as possible. But, you know, a lot of times they don't want to hear it, and we can get into all this, and we are going to get into this. We've got a great show for you. We're going to talk about Turkey. We're going to talk about what's going on with Maduro down in Venezuela. We're going to get in and start to zoom in from the international into here in America. But stick around. We're going to pay some bills real quick, and then we'll be right back. Ever consider how much information is stored on your phone, personal data, bank account info, and access to your two-factor authentication? All those apps provide data that tells a story about you. That's why we're teaming up with Cylent. Cylent offers an efficient, an easy solution to protect your location and personal data. Your Faraday products block all incoming and outgoing signals, so no one can get their hands on your information. Simply place your device inside, close the sleeve, and that's it. You are off the grid, untrackable, and safe from unauthorized access. Hardware wallets are also mission-critical gear. It's crucial to keep them safe from hackers and events like EMPs and solar flares. Silence Faraday bags provide an extra layer of protection for your Bitcoin, ensuring your signing device is secure from remote tampering, EMP, and solar flares. Go silent today at slnt.com/BTCVETS to save 15% plus free shipping on qualifying orders. Stay ahead of what's coming and secure your privacy today. Again, that's slnt.com/BTCVETS for 15% off and free shipping on qualified orders. slnt.com/BTCVETS. Black Sheep Ammunition. Veteran-owned and operated, Black Sheep Ammunition graciously donated 6,000 rounds to Bitcoin veterans for the Nashville Range Day event. Use Bitcoin 10 for 10% off. Black Sheep Ammunition is not made for the faint of heart. They craft ammo for the black sheep, for the watchful defenders called to hunt, provide, and protect, and for the brave patriots who boldly keep watch atop the hill, and for the weirdos who aren't afraid to stray from the flock. When courage calls you to action, Black Sheep will be there to answer. Their mission is to supply every freedom-loving American with enough firepower to get the job done twice. Check them out at blacksheepammo.com. Use the code Bitcoin10 for 10% off. Right on, man. Thank you to the sponsors, too. Those are some great products, especially SLNT, man. Those guys at Silent, they make some really cool stuff. I don't know about you, Mike, but I've been throwing my my phone in the bag at night so that not getting any of that electromagnetic feedback in my already compromised brain here. But we were talking a little bit before the show started about what's going on over in Turkey. There is, let me just pull it up here real quick for everybody. There's a story out of the AP, you know, as terrible as they are, this is at least, it's mostly factual. In Ankara, Turkey, a senior official on Tuesday confirmed that a report in Turkey wants to join the BRICS bloc for developing economies, but stopped short of declaring that the NATO country had formally applied for membership. The Bloomberg news agency reported Monday that Turkey had officially applied to join BRICS several months ago. Asked about the report, Omar Silik, the Turkish prime minister's Rogdon's ruling party, said Rogdon had stated several times that Turkey aspires to become a member. Quote, our request on this issue is clear. This process is ongoing, but there is no concrete developing regarding this. He told reporters, our president has clearly stated that Turkey wants to take part in an all important platforms, including BRICS. The BRICS alliance was founded in 2006 by Brazil, Russia, India, and China, with South Africa joining in 2010, but has recently undergone major expansion and now includes Iran, Egypt, Ethiopia, United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, has also said it's considering joining. The Azerbaijan has formally applied. So, this is actually a huge development, I think.
Yeah. One second. I'm going to drop out. I'm going to see if I can't get a fix to where I can at least stream to like Twitter so we can get the people that want to watch up and going. So I'll be right back.
All right, brother. So I'll kind of take the con here for just a moment. This whole thing, we were talking about this before the show, just a little bit. There are some major pipelines that run through Turkey, connecting the Middle East to Europe. And, you know, when these guys and, you know, the United Arab Emirates and Ethiopia and Egypt and Iran, you know, all of these guys are saying, hey, we're done with the dollar and we want out. I mean, this is the first NATO country that has done so. And being Turkey and, you know, understanding what their geographical position is and their politics are and the fact that they are part of NATO, this is a giant, giant power move and a giant power shift that is shifting eastwards towards those BRICS nations. And, you know, with with everything that's going on in, you know, the world that's changing fast. And I think one of the biggest catalysts in the world for changing is the fact that money doesn't wait, and money is moving extremely fast out of fiat and all its derivatives into, you know, these harder assets, you know, whether it's property, whether it's gold, whether it's, you know, silver or commodities like, you know, oil. You know, this is one of those things that is absolutely moving, and it's picking up a ton of speed. And this domino that's falling is going to, I think, inspire or encourage others to do so in that region.
Well, and like the other thing too is, and I think it might be working now, so hopefully it is. But like the biggest thing is that this is signaling again, like what I brought up in like the kind of like the foreplay of the episode tonight was that like this is signaling what's going to be what we're looking forward to in the future.
Yeah.
Right. Cause almost everybody is like, it seems like these kinds of events are kicking off and everyone is looking at the now impact or like what has happened historically recently that is justifying this decision. And like, okay, that, I mean, that's, you can use those, like those filters to try and like determine why do this now. You can do that, but you're missing the most important part of the entire calculus of the decision, which is the infinite possibilities that are the future, right? And the thing is that we thought that Nord Stream was bad.
Yeah.
Turkey getting involved and being able to cut off a major pipeline that goes into the entire continent of Europe is, I would argue, bigger. Because I'm not prepared for this conversation. Otherwise I would look up a PDF that I have of like, I have a map of all of the pipelines that lead into Europe.
Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, the one that goes through Turkey is one of the biggest. I might be wrong. Chat, you can call me out on that if I am. I have no problems with that, but, it might be one of the biggest going into Europe. And now, that doesn't necessarily have to mean that there's going to be war between Asia and Europe. I don't think that we have to really worry about that, because if you take into account events that we've talked about for the last year that's gone on over in Europe and what seems to be the likely trajectory going forward, Europe seems like the NATO alliance and the EU, especially the European Central Bank, like the ECB, it seems like NATO and the EU are going to, they're either going to drastically be reduced in number or they're going to dissolve entirely at this point, because you're looking at all of these different countries between the UK, which includes Ireland, Sweden, I think has had issues, Germany, France, they're all dealing with these issues of immigration and the different cultural mixings that's going on mixed with the DEI nonsense. Yeah. And the fact that Christine Lagarde at the ECP has no idea what she's doing with regards to banking. And they are trying to continue to pressure the U.S. to continue to print whenever they want so they can get as many U.S. dollars as they need, because there are zero regulations on hold for the U.S. dollars in circulation over in Europe, that like their entire basis for the glue that is holding everything together is literally falling apart at the seams right now.
Yeah.
So like the big thing is that if chaos erupts in Europe, Turkey goes over to BRICS. If the chaos in Europe gets so bad is like Turkey just would rather re-divert that flow of gas and natural resources to like say Africa, where there's way more possibilities for business and development, they can do that. And then Europe just falls deeper and deeper into a dark hole because they need to get energy and they've shut off all their nuclear power plants. So like that's the stuff that concerns me.
Yeah. And I mean, if you don't think that's by absolute design, you're kidding yourself. And I don't think anybody in this audience would. I mean, there's a lot of strategic thinkers, right? People who are doing, you know, war gaming. Who shuts off your nuclear power when all of a sudden Russia is in Ukraine and maybe, you know, you've weaponized the dollar or weaponized the euro against them, and they're not sending you, you know, the bulk of your power needs anymore. So all by design, I think. When we're looking at Turkey, you've got the Blue Stream over there and a couple others that are running east to west, And yeah, I mean, if this happened, and you know, I think it probably will, and I think it's going to domino. And you can see on the map here, you know, whether it's Bulgaria, Georgia, Romania, you know, Ukraine, Belarus, Latvia, Lithuania, all these countries that have, you know, in the past seceded from, you know, the USSR back in the day, right? Like some of you guys are old enough to remember 1988, when everything kind of changed a little bit over there, and you know, the West said, you know, not one more inch to the east after, you know, we get Germany reunited. And obviously you can kind of take a look. I mean, Finland, Latvia, Lithuania, they all share a border with Russia, and they're all part of NATO now. And I don't know exactly how many of these countries we've added in that time, but a significant amount. And, you know, if these guys start going, well, you know, these guys have energy and they're dealing with non-funny money that isn't destroying not only our popularity in terms of being a quote unquote ruling class over there. And, you know, that's kind of what it is. If that's what it is, and they're looking to stay in power, then that switch is just going to go like that someday. And then a giant country like Turkey, that's not only geographically poised, but also energy poised to help make that happen, this could happen very, very quickly.
Well, and the other thing that could happen very, very quickly, especially with those border countries, is very, very realistically, like a level of Bitcoin adoption. At the very highest, for trade, right? For trade and energy, like Russia's already proposed that. But also just for like the people, because if you're doing trade like across those borders, like, and you're a country that's in the middle, like you're the neutral party, right? You're the buffer zone for both sides. You're gonna want to use, you're gonna need to use both currencies interchangeably, but you're gonna want something that is neutral and separate from the rest of them to keep your access, right? And that's reality for Eastern Europe. It's going to be reality for Africa. I don't know enough about Africa as far as like the dividing lines between the parties that are involved, because we think that Syria in the Middle East is a cluster bomb of fucks. I think Africa is probably worse, in my opinion, as far as like the different warlords. And like the biggest thing is like the biggest thing for me for that confusion isn't even necessarily the warlords, but they're a major player, but like the back behind the scenes influences that China, Russia, and the US in particular have been engaging in for the last 50 years.
I mean, you look at it too. I mean, European influence in Africa is fading. I think Germany just got kicked out of Niger, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I mean, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I mean, so
I think we were part of that too, weren't we? We had like 1,000 U.S. soldiers in Niger.
Well, let's hope so. I mean, instead of 100,
because like that was part of it, is like they were effectively being held hostage because like we weren't recalling them.
Yeah,
but Niger was like, you need to GTFO like yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a. I mean, if people don't know, you should, especially, I think a lot of the Bitcoiners do know just absolutely how entrenched European countries have been. And I'm not saying that Eastern countries haven't gone in, you know, the belt, what is it? The Belt and Road Initiative from China, but that's our exporting of the US dollar through the IMF and the World Bank to set up all these, you know, ridiculous, scams in African countries, right? Literally, like basically we're just gonna indebt you guys, we're gonna get real rich off of this, and maybe some of your people will benefit at the same time. But you know, let's not hold our breath. The fact that this influence from the West is wearing off in Africa is also, I think, another sign that a lot of these African countries, especially places like Niger, Ethiopia and quite a few others, Chad, to name a few, just like these countries are already moving into that hard asset Bitcoin type of area. And because they were never banked to begin with, you know, they have such an easier time divorcing themselves from this bullshit narrative that they've seen, you know, through for a long time because of economic debasement. So Yeah, man.
Well, and like one of the, finish your thought. I apologize.
Oh, I was about there. I just think it's as this is all coming unglued, you're seeing the signs of it coming unglued and the empire is falling. Yeah. And I say the empire, not just America, like the dollar empire that was the Federal Reserve is absolutely on life. It's falling fast. It's on life support.
Yeah. Yeah. And like a couple of things that I wanted to comment on there was that the African countries, what's up, Jeff? The African countries that are like of the most intelligent, Alex, what's up, man? The African countries that are the most intelligent that have been making good strides in just like the last couple of years or even the last decade or two, the most intelligent are going to be playing that neutral asset game that I was talking about with the Eastern European situation. Right. Because like they're going to be like the reason why El Salvador has been just smeared in the public discourse is because of what their decision does to current and future power prospects for other superpowers. Right. Because if you're a country, say you're Africa, or say you're in Africa, or say you're in South America, say you're in El Salvador, say you're Niger, whatever, use whatever basis you want for this example. If you're leading a country, and you decide to put your savings or your excess or whatever into an asset like Bitcoin because gold doesn't make sense anymore. If you do it and you benefit greatly, like El Salvador has, you're still in a position of where you can take on debt with another country and get infrastructure projects started, and you can be gratuitous to another country.
Yeah,
but they don't have you by the balls anymore. That's what scares them. Like if you're a superpower and you want to gain another, what they call in the intel community, an asset in quotes, if you want another asset, if you want to gain an asset, you don't go to them and try to like befriend them or work with them as an equal. Like you want them as a pawn. That's what you want, because that's power, right? Yeah. And that's what they've been doing behind the scenes. That's what Confessions of an Economic Hitman is all about. It's also what, like, I mean, if you're going to be a good negotiator, like, you don't compromise. You don't, like, what's the book that Randy and Steve suggested? Split the Difference. You don't split the difference. You're going to give me what I want, or
I'm not going to get the will.
Yeah. Or you're going to give me what I want. If you don't, I'm going to find somebody that will. Yep. Or you're not going to get anything that you want. Right. Like that's what's going on right now. People like, it blows my mind that people like, they can understand this stuff in like person, like face-to-face interactions. Like you're dealing with a bidding war with like some idiot at a car dealership or something. But then when it comes to like making decisions for a country, it's like, oh no, like the game has to be different. Yeah. No.
You're either going to get me the damn car that I want at the price that I want, or I'm going to go see another guy.
Yeah, I'm going to walk out.
And it's a different game, because what those guys are doing is saying, hey, you're going to give me what I want, or I'm going to leverage part of your family, your property. And what makes this so much different now, what Bitcoin does in terms of changing the game, is now that the money printer isn't on their side, they can't buy people. It's like if you go to El Salvador now and you say, hey man, I want to, you know, I'm not saying it's 100%, it's not bulletproof, you know, there are obviously other things, but when money's cheap and or free for the counterfeiting class, which is the agency, it's the Mossad, it's they're all the same group of people for that matter. Having worked with the agency back in my early young years in forced reconnaissance, when we were working with Fifth Group, and we would go and we would roll up, you know, these different guys, and then, you know, we would lean on whoever we needed to lean on. But
Shane, you're a fucking fed.
Yeah, right, Rand. So most
I had to take the opportunity.
Yeah, we were the kind of the muscle side of, you know, making sure, you know, in forced reconnaissance, the force side is direct action. So that includes going in, cordoning off an area, taking down a you know, building or whatever you need to do in terms of making it safe, and then the other assets come in from America or wherever, and they say, hey dude, this is what we'd like to do, and most of the time, they don't want to do it in a violent fashion, right? Like the first thing that they're going to do is they're going to offer you a bag of money. And if they don't have to pay for that money, and that money just comes with no, you know,
no strings attached,
no strings attached, and it costs them literally nothing to do it. That's the way they want to do it each and every time. And now they can't do that because Bitcoin is one of those things where you got to proof of work. You're not printing Bitcoin and going, hey, man, I'd like to either buy you or intimidate you to the point where you're going to do what's terrible for your country, but what's great for us. And yeah, we'll make sure you don't die and you stay in power. No matter how much you're hated, you'll live a life of luxury and fame and have power, and that'll be it. And you know,
well, and on top of that too, like I want to just like, because like there's going to be people that maybe like three people that hear this conversation and they're like, well, why would somebody do that? Like why, like, well, on both sides, right? Like why on the side of the person who's giving the bag of cash, why would they just give them cash with no strings attached? Or why would the person receiving it do something that's against like their best interest for their community or their country just because they're receiving cash? Have you never heard of the mob?
Yeah.
Like the mob gets what they get done a lot of the times accomplished because of favors.
Yeah. It's like literally,
if somebody shows up on your doorstep after your house has been blown up and they're like, here's $50,000. Are you going to say no? And then when that person comes back, it's like, hey, I need your help. I need you, when you go to work, I need you to put a couple files on a USB drive and bring it home. And then like, I'll pick it up from you, like at a later date. You wouldn't, like, you're honestly going to tell me you wouldn't do that? Like if you lost everything and you had to provide for your family, you're going to turn down 50, 100 grand, you know, whatever the dollar amount is.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
or we have these really scary guys that will just come into your residence in the middle of the night and, you know, make life real scary for everybody around. Right. And that, I mean,
and you don't know that it's that party that is willing to give you the cash either. Like there's also those things that are going on. Maybe they're not directly causing the chaos. Maybe they're allowing the chaos to happen so that they can extort you in your neighborhood. For their means.
And if, you know, if you think you're, you know, one of those strong guys that is not going to bow to that kind of pressure where, you know, debt is being restructured in those type of countries, you know, well, there's a long, long line of bodies of tough guys that said, we're not going to do that. And they are no more. You mean that's,
and guess what? They didn't even get the chance to become martyrs because nobody knows who they are.
That's right.
the other thing too is that kind of like what I wanted to bring up with like your mentioning of this before we went on our own like separate side tangent was the being able to like buy people is getting less and less effective because the smartest people are like, I mean, look at how many people are now aware to like what's going on with currency debasement and inflation within the US, let alone across the globe. So like when people are recognizing this, that also means that what those nefarious actors who are trying to buy assets or people, when those people are trying to buy other people or those groups, that means that that mechanism is also becoming less effective. So you're looking at a likelihood of there being less capable of buying smarter and more capable assets. You know, pay them in Bitcoin, you can probably get some pretty pretty smart people, just saying.
I think there's a very high correlation between, you know, the fuck you money coming out in Bitcoin and, you know, free speech, where, you know, people who are not afraid to say whatever it is, right? You know, any group out there that you think you can't say. I mean, just look at Twitter. I saw something the other day, you know, and it was one of those things in the 80s where we grew up with language like retard and fag and all that kind of stuff, right? And like we never thought anything about it. Most of the time you were calling your best friends that, and it wasn't you weren't making fun of some, you know, dork down the street that, you know, that wasn't the way it was. It was all,
or if you used it against the wrong person, you got hit in the face.
Oh yeah. Right. And
learn that lesson.
The resurgence of just that, the pendulum swinging now that, you know, Twitter, I'm not going to say it's absolute free speech, but there's a lot more of it there than anywhere else. I saw some sort of, you know, count the other day on how many times the word retard or fag had been used. And the uptick is absolutely substantial, right? Is like the language is changing. People, and I mean this, in like the use of language and what people will talk about now is changing very fast, because I believe there's a lot of people who have exited the system with Bitcoin, and now they can, they're not beholden to anybody. Nobody's holding a damn job over their head. Nobody's coming to them and going, oh, hey, you got to do this or you got to do that, right? In a community where now you can reach out around the world instead of just being at your local pub and getting the news. Yep. And what's socially acceptable to say. Now it's socially acceptable to reach out to that group wherever they are, and you can have any conversation you want. And I think that's, I think that is a really cool thing. And it's not that I'm all for, you know, people going out there and, you know, fag this and retard that. Like, that's not it. But having substantial conversations that are based in merit and truth and facts that are outside the other norm, which we were talking about earlier, right? It's like, hey, man. Yeah. That low T or that high T that says, hey, I don't need any of this shit anymore. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to say what needs to be said. That is a beautiful thing to see. And it also exposes the people who are bad actors.
Yeah. Well, and I don't mind. I don't know if you mind, but I wanted to use what we just talked about and with like the mafia and the IC and all that USAID, however you want to refer to them. Rolling into what's going on with Maduro, right? Oh, because this is something that's really, really important for everybody that's involved in Bitcoin, is that Bitcoin isn't just going to support the people that you appreciate or that you agree with.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm not necessarily saying that Maduro is a good guy or a bad guy. I'm not very intelligent or educated on what's going on over there, so you might be able to dispel some more information. But the big thing is that just because a politician says that they like Bitcoin doesn't necessarily mean you should.
Yeah, I don't know, but I followed Maduro. What was it? I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, when in the last Venezuelan uprising election, where Maduro was trying to hang on to power. So this isn't, you know, this isn't his first time flirting with, you know, coups and any, like he's fairly well experienced with this kind of stuff. But, you know, as the Bitbo.io is reporting here, Maduro is pushing for a renewed Bitcoin adoption in Venezuela. Goes on to say, Nicolas Maduro advocates for a return to the Bitcoin after previous efforts were derailed by corruption. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro has called for his country to revive its Bitcoin initiatives following a period of government crackdowns that halted pro-Bitcoin policies. He blames bandits and thieves for the failure of the previous efforts to integrate Bitcoin into Venezuela's economy. Yeah, I'll kind of stop there. But, you know, for him to be, you know, right there, you know, in the same region with El Salvador and seeing, I think, probably the great success that they're having. I mean, Venezuela's got their own problems with, you know, organized crime and, you know, killer gangs and everything else out there. But for Maduro to see that and to be under the pressure he's under, and maybe even possibly having even some conversations with Bukele, you know, to say,
yeah,
right. Like, I mean, I would be like, dude, all right. Help me out. Help me understand this orange coin stuff so that my country is a little bit more like yours, because you've obviously not been killed by the CIA yet, or moved, right? So, and you've got a lot of your violent prisoners and gangs that are all locked up now. And, you know, that's the one thing that I think Bukele did right, you know, is when he talked about the way he starts most everything is with a prayer and a call to, you know, have God guide them. And then, you know, everything else is downstream from that. You know, I don't know if that's going to be Maduro or not. I have no idea. But, you know, if that's the way he's moving, and it's because of a positive incentive structure, which Bitcoin is the positive incentive structure, then, yeah, you know, if Maduro is not the greatest guy, at least this has to make him better by the rules, right? And yeah, like you said, you know, Bitcoin's not only for the good guys, it's for the bad guys too. But the problem is if you want to play with the good guys in this space, the guys that are actually doing the you know the charity work, the building of a new economic system, you've got to come in and you've got to play by the rules, or else Bitcoin's going to spit you out.
Well, and like the when you mentioned like the gangs and the problems that Venezuela is dealing with, I wanted to like I was looking up just to make sure that my information was correct, and it was, is that Venezuela is dealing with all those issues, and they shouldn't be, because they have more oil than Saudi Arabia.
Right.
They should be making more money to be able to have the proper systems, like as far as like the, you know, police or whatever, to the point of where they're capable of funding, being able to take care of and protect their population regardless. Like it shouldn't be an issue, but it is, because Venezuela is indebted to the US through the dollar system, and it's being levered through you guys should look into, again, Operation Gladio, because like when it comes to the gangs, those gangs were produced by Operation Gladio means, and it's precisely what El Salvador had to deal with MS-13. MS-13 wasn't an issue for El Salvador until we created them, sent them to the U.S., where they learned a bunch of tactics and like how to perpetuate their business and everything, and then we sent them back to El Salvador and just made the entire country a cluster jam. I'm trying not to swear. But it's just like, it's like people, like, the way I say things is that, like, it sounds like I'm blaming people for not understanding, which I can't, because I didn't understand a lot of this stuff even a couple years ago. But if you're going to judge a lot of what's going on, you have to understand the landscape of what we're dealing with. And Venezuela is dealing with a landscape where they have been completely downtrodden and destroyed by the U.S. dollar system and by the U.S. and the U.S. intelligence agencies. They need Bitcoin more than ever.
Yeah.
Like, and like the other thing too is like when you're dealing with Maduro, like, yeah, he probably has held on to his presidency longer than he should have. But to defend him a little bit, I don't know if I'm gonna, this is probably gonna bite me in the ass, but to defend him a little bit, well, in order to have a nuanced opinion,
right? Like let's frame this the right way. Let's give some nuance in this world of people that just like to slather things with.
I'm a fan with nuance.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I started to interrupt. I just want to make sure we're framing this so that, you know, it's not like, oh, hey, Mike is a Maduro guy. Like, no, like Mike has some ideas and nuance, which I think is, you know, greatly needed in this world.
Yeah. Well, cause like what I was getting at is like, even if you are a bad president, or even if you are a dictator, or if you're not, if you're a benevolent leader, like say the way that everybody looked at JFK, if you're JFK, or if you're a Maduro, but you're dealing with the same problems, it's basically going to take the same solution, right? Which is doing precisely what El Salvador did, rounding them up, getting them all together all at once, and then locking them up. Like, that's how you do it. The U.S. was about to do it in the 40s. We were dealing with Nazi saboteurs in the harbors on the eastern seaboard.
Yeah.
We were about to get rid of the mob, but then we needed them. And then we integrated them into the U.S. intelligence agency system, and therefore the military and the judicial system and the governmental system. Like, we made that mistake. And I'm hoping El Salvador does it, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think Whitney Webb makes a really good point of this in One Nation Under Blackmail. if you haven't read
it, I haven't touched yet. Like, I need to, but I haven't touched it yet.
Yeah, One Nation Under Blackmail by Whitney Webb. I will tell you right now. If you haven't read them, definitely go and read those. They are fantastic. There's two volumes now, one and two, and I think you can pick them up on Amazon or Audible out there for about $20. Definitely worth your time, worth your read, because like Mike's talking about, you know, Operation Gladio, it's a lot of stuff that's been going on for a very long time in the U.S. You know, to kind of wrap the whole thing up with Maduro here, you know, if you go back to the U.S.'s first coup, Operation Ajax with Iran, you know, effectively we were going after Iranian oil. We've all, like, the British government, which turned in, you know, had BP basically turned into, or I should say the company that turned into BP, had harbored a deal with the leaders of Iran back in, you know, the early 1900s, because they found all this amazing, you know, liquid gold basically under their sands. And they said, hey, you know, we'll come in here and we'll put in the infrastructure. We'll do all this. And then at that point, you know, we'll split a little bit of it. And Iran got smart and wise and said, hey, why are we doing this with these guys when we can do this ourselves? Well, you look at, you know, you fast forward into, you know, what happened, or I should say what came out during the 80s with Iran Contra, same kind of stuff, right? Is like you start to see what the agency was doing in its infancy after it got, you know, instituted after World War One. And, you know, it's this smuggling, running, you know, all sorts of, you know, drugs and, you know kids, human trafficking, all of this kind of stuff, standing up armies in part of the world, trying to get resources out of different parts of the world. And it's just this cycle that comes around and around, and it's now breaking. And I think, you know, maybe it's breaking a little bit in Venezuela, and it's obviously broken in El Salvador. It's going to break a ton of these sites. I should say, it's going to break a ton of the systems that they've set up and they've had in place for decades. And that's going to change the world fast.
And that's why we're seeing rats jump the ship now. That's why a lot of conversation has like become a lot more public. I don't know. Okay. Some of those people might not be rats. They might have been stuck in the system. They were good actors, and they saw an out, and now they're comfortable to talk about it. Sure, whatever.
Yeah.
But like as the branches of this tree or this root system continue to break, there's going to be more information that finds its way into the spotlight that continues to defend conspiracy theorists.
He has lost his privilege.
I think our list of victories is going to continue to unravel with more and more green check marks as being correct than anything for the next. It's probably going to be for the next couple, like, decade or two.
Yeah, you know, I hope it has. You know, there's part of me, Mike, I get conflicted with this all the time. I'm just like, rip off the damn Band-Aid. Rip it off and let's be done with whatever this transition period is, right? And, you know, there's, you know, books out there, and I think Jordan did a good job, especially in our chats. If you guys aren't part of our chats and you want to be part of it, you can go to bitcoinveterans.org. We'll put you in our chats. A lot of it's book club stuff. And Jordan, I think, has got the lead this year on the number of books read, but he was kind of tearing apart the fourth turning. There are some interesting things about the fourth turning. But this period that we're in right now, the fourth turning is going to be revolutionary. It's going to be, there's going to be some violent pockets. They're already, obviously, there's genocides going on around the world. We're funding at least two of them. It's disgusting. But as this thing, you know, stops, or I should say changes and takes hold, and they can't buy, you know, the people that are willing to do violence on their behalf anymore, because it's just not going to pay off. I think the world's going to change extremely fast. And I hope it's not, you know, 10 years. I hope it's, you know, 2, 3, 4 years, you know, something like that, where once people start to really understand this, Bitcoin, along with other freedom tech, Nostr, which we should definitely mention here, these two things alone are going to change the world so fast when more people understand it and find out about it and understand how to use it. And then technology is reinvested with ease of use, right? Like right now, it's not as easy as it could be, but over time, it'll get easier and more intuitive. And as a generation comes into this, you know, a younger generation comes into this, it'll just be natural. And I think that's one of the biggest things, is this transfer of wealth from the boomer generation into Gen X and the millennials and so on, that this is going to change so fast now that I just don't think people understand the world we're going to be looking at 10 years is going to be vastly different.
Well, it's like, to the point of like, all of the points that we want to talk about, we still haven't gotten to. Most of the points that like you had like queued up is stuff that I haven't had the time to be able to like even like see what's going on. And Bitcoiners think that like staying on top of what's going on in Bitcoin, like you try and stay on top of it for 3 months, it feels like you've been watching for 3 years.
Yeah.
Like that's to your point, that's gonna be the world. Like things are gonna be happening, and they already are, but like the flywheel is only beginning to speed up.
Yeah. Yeah. One last international thing that I found really disheartening, but at the same time, you know, to see the response on Twitter, I thought was excellent. So over in Ireland, this teacher, Enoch Burke, was arrested at Wilson's Hospital School in Ireland after refusing to endorse and affirm transgender ideology. For him, there are only two genders, male and female. And that's, obviously they're asking the question, but to see these guys, and I won't play the video because Mike and I can just run through an hour and a half with no problem, apparently. Dude, in Ireland, for those of you guys don't know, like my family, you know, part of my family is, you know, straight up immigrants from Ireland. And it pains me to see, you know, I guess that tie that I have to Ireland, to have these guys not only arresting guys that are like, no man, it's XX or XY, like it's trust the fucking science, right? Like it's either it's XY, and I'm not going to sit here and endorse your bullshit ideology, which, you know, both these guys are dudes, right? They didn't send somebody else out to arrest them. They sent somebody out there to arrest them that could physically overpower him and put him in the back of a paddy wagon and take him off. And it's like, yep. You know, it's
why'd
like,
they do that, Shane?
Yeah, I don't know, but to have
it's almost like the other gender couldn't accomplish it.
Or and that's the thing is, I don't even say gender. I just say it's the sex. Is it XX or XY? I don't care.
Gender is supposed to be the roles or social roles. It's like, whatever,
right,
dude.
Yeah. You didn't send an XX out there, right? Like you sent XYs, and maybe I'm backwards. I don't know. I got a 50-50 chance here. So the idea that they sent a couple dudes out there to do this and throw him in the back of the wagon. I was just like, dude, not even your own organization is like, you guys don't think that it's all equal. No, nobody thinks it's all equal. Joe Rogan's got one of the best bits in all of comedy about this. He's like, you know, like when it comes to protecting the White House, like this equality bullshit it's got to go, because he's like, let me tell you about like women being equal to females. Not even all males are equal to other males, right? And he's like, I come up to Shaq's penis and like, like, yeah, man.
I'm standing up and my face is at like Shaq's dick.
Yeah, he's like, we're barely even the same thing, right? So it's like, yeah, man. Like I saw this and it struck a nerve with me. Is golly, it's like I would think here, I would hope here in the United States that this would be met like this is it. Like you're literally violating the last of my rights right here. Like if you'll do this, you'll do anything. And I think that's where people need to start understanding, like, there are some decisions that you're going to have to make. And, you know, boy, Start Nine, what was it, Matt, what is Matt's last
Matthew
name?
Hill?
Matt Hill, yeah. Matt Hill had a really, really good bit about this on BTC Sessions. And he said something to the effect of, you need to start making up your mind. He's like, you either don't need to matter whatsoever, right? Like, you either don't matter, or you need to be willing to make the decision when it comes, when it does matter. And that means you're either going to fold and bend the knee, or you're not going to. And, you know, that's where we're
kind of. And you deal with the consequences that are on both sides.
Exactly right. And he's like, you need to start thinking about this, because most people don't have any idea, you know, where they're going to be when shit hits, you know, the fan.
Most people don't even think beyond that decision.
No. Not
like that, and that's the problem, is like if you're like, whether you choose to bend the knee or not, like when you make the choice, you're also choosing to deal with the possible consequences that come afterwards,
right?
So if you choose to bend the knee, you're also choosing to not be able to make any decisions for yourself or for your family, regardless of whether it's for your benefit or not.
Yeah,
right. So if you choose to bend the knee, there's also a possibility you're choosing to have CBDCs, which also means you're choosing to have somebody dictate whether you can make steak for your kids or not, which also means whether you can like pay for the energy to keep your family cool or warm at night.
Boy, sounds like a mandibles to me, man. I mean,
yeah, weird. Oh. Weird how that works.
Golly. Yeah, if you haven't read The Mandibles, that's another great book from the Bitcoin Veterans Book Club.
but that Ireland situation is just is another, that's another example of where the system is breaking. And they're working really hard to try and wrangle that power and that control back over the populace.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you know, and this isn't, you know, the only problem that Ireland is facing right now. Ireland is facing a migrant issue, and, you know, obviously, the UK is too, because the governments, you know, across the board have just said, yeah, you know what, we're gonna flood these populations, right? We're gonna absolutely flood these people in. We're going to incentivize it. Here in the United States, I think Nancy Pelosi was on the other day where she was like literally in her stupor on I don't know what show it was, basically justifying the fact that they're going to give about $150,000 to anybody who's coming into the United States that's not an American to buy their first home. And you're like, yeah, the Great Replacement is not, it's not a fairy tale. It's literally
the funny part about, I saw some pushback on that topic, because like the loan facility, I guess you can call it, mm-hmm. that loan facility is like technically open to U.S. citizens too.
Okay.
And they're like using it as a pushback. It's not, they're not just like paying the illegal immigrants like this money. It's like, no, but they shouldn't get any access to it at all. That's the point. Yeah. You don't get support from the government if you're an illegal alien.
Well, you don't, like, here's the thing is you don't get money that was taken from citizens through force and coercion, right? Like that's a bad stance when you put it that way, to say, hey, listen, no, man, like this money was taken through force and coercion from American citizens, and now we're going to give it to people that just got here. Why? You know, and we all
know, ignoring all the other people that have been here in the country as citizens that are homeless, whether and they including veterans or in poverty that are just dealing with stuff. Like, you don't want to give the money to them. You want to give the money to people who just got here illegally, effectively doing nothing that was right by the legal system.
Yeah.
And you want to give them money.
Very interesting. Cool.
That means you don't value me. That means I'm going to start doing whatever I want. You can basically go fuck yourself. That's what it's going to result in.
I've wondered, you know, I think we're approaching that point here in the U.S. too, is, you know, Thomas Jefferson, thank God he penned the Declaration of Independence. And one of the rights of human beings is when, you know, we find ourselves at odds with whatever authority the government has, is to throw it off and to create, you know, whatever system we need after that.
Yeah.
And so I'm very curious as to, you know, how a lot of people who are not into Bitcoin, that don't understand Bitcoin, that are not that are absolutely being debased, their entire life is being debased right now. They see that there is absolutely no justice whatsoever. They're seeing that, you know, the people who wear badges and guns are coming around and picking on the peaceful people still, while giving a lot of the violent offenders, you know, just a free go and everything else. I wonder how long that goes on before you have certain swaths of the country go, no. And, you know, we're willing to get together, exercise our rights as, you know, as free men will, and say enough is enough, right? Like, and I'm not saying, like, you know, it's going to be a hot war. Like, there's literally ways to do this where you just go and have a conversation with a big group of armed dudes in your local sheriff and go, hey, listen, we're real peaceful people, but this nonsense has got an end, right? Like,
Yeah,
I hope it's that way. I'm not saying it's going to be. I know I live in La La Land for some of that kind of stuff, but I think it's possible. You know, I'm trying to clear my local area, so
as the resident doomer, I don't think it's not possible or not likely. Like the what makes it harder for it to be accomplished is those communities and those areas need that proper masculine that's going to step into that role and be like, no, guys.
Yeah.
We don't need to do it this way. We don't want to do it this way. Let me go talk to them. I will talk to them on like our behalf. Let's just get together and make sure that we have, like, you know, our concerns put together. I'll go talk to them. You guys don't, because you clearly don't have the capability or whatever. You don't want to. I would like, it's best to just try and take the peaceful route first. And that's like, I would like to see and hear that like our Bitcoin veterans are those people. I think they are.
Oh yeah.
But like, that's what it should be, is like, hey, we're not here to do, you know, X, Y, or Z. We're literally just trying to make sure our families and our neighborhoods are safe. We're not going to be out patrolling, gun toting, drinking, doing all this other crap. We're here to like work with you, but you can't be doing this shit. Like, yeah. This is not acceptable. Like, that's the kind of stuff. Right. And I think that's very likely, because like, especially in like, you and I have talked about it a ton. It's like the dissemination of information with like the technology today. Mm-hmm. As soon as one group, like as soon as the evidence of one group doing this spreads, like say, like we can roll right into one of the other topics we're going to talk about, like what's going on in Aurora. If there was groups, if there was a group to stand up and just like join up with the, like stand side by side with like the police, as long as the police are doing their job, right? Working with the deputies and the sheriffs and being like, hey, like we're here to help out, but you can't be doing censorship or like violating the Constitution or any of this garbage.
Right.
Right. And that's how it should be. Once evidence of that happens, once evidence of that happens and it makes it onto the internet, probably through Twitter, it will inspire others to do so. And that's the kind of stuff that you can do to really help push forward healthy change without the unhealthy inclusion of bloodshed and violence.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. We're going to talk about Aurora in a minute, but we're going to pay homage to our sponsors. Go out there and follow and like those guys. It's going to help us with all of our sponsors, but we'll be right back to talk about Aurora. A big shout out to our friends over at Punchplate. Coddle.co, that's CODL.co. Punchplates are a durable medium for your Bitcoin and can store 12 words or 24 word Bitcoin backups. Storing your Bitcoin in metal ensures your keys will survive in the elements, accidental spills, and in some cases even fire. You don't have to worry about smeared ink or ripped paper and can sleep soundly knowing your Bitcoin are inscribed on a punch plate. These are the best prices you're going to find in this industry. $24 for a 24-word punch plate. It's simple. It's a punch and a plate. No little letters, no stamps with letters on them, just a punch and a plate. Go check them out at coddle.co. That's punchplate at coddle.co. Solo Satoshi is dedicated to the advancement of open source Bitcoin mining with a steadfast commitment to the security and decentralization of the Bitcoin network. As a pioneering force in the Bitcoin space, their mission is to empower individuals and businesses worldwide with innovative, secure, and decentralized mining solutions. At Solo Satoshi, they believe in the transformative power of open source software and the potential it holds for the future of Bitcoin mining. They strive to foster a community of developers and enthusiasts who share our vision of a more secure and decentralized Bitcoin landscape. Our dedication to open source principles is at the heart of their mission, driving their commitment to transparency, collaboration, and innovation. They are passionate about supporting the growth and the development of the Bitcoin network, and they recognize the critical role that open source software and developers play in achieving this goal. By promoting and contributing to open source ecosystems, they aim to facilitate a more robust and resilient Bitcoin network, ensuring its longevity and success for years to come. At Solo Satoshi, their mission is not only to provide cutting-edge mining solutions, but also to educate and inspire others about the importance of decentralization and open source principles in the Bitcoin space. They believe that by working together, we can create a future where Bitcoin mining is more accessible, efficient, and aligned with the core values of decentralization and open collaboration. All right. Man, did you see those guys from Solo actually had another BitAxe go out there and mine a block?
Damn.
they had one during the conference, and I think last week they had another one. It's just like, damn, man. Like, the guys are killing it right now. All right, so back to the news. We had these things pop up over the weekend, the reports that a Venezuelan gang had taken over a Colorado apartment complex. I don't know what you've seen on this, Mike, but I actually, you know, jumped into this. I think we saw something go back and forth in the Bitcoin chats out there, in the Bitcoin veteran chats, yeah. I should say, about the Hell's Angels coming out. What's your take on this entire mess?
Well, for one, I think there's been a lot of like kind of like sensationalism suggesting that the gangs have taken over Aurora. Not from what I've seen, from what I've heard from I think even a friend of mine said that they used to live there over like over the weekend. It's a pretty big town from what he was describing. Yeah. And from everything that I've seen, as the reports are, it's a couple of complexes, apartment complexes. Now, I'm not saying it's not a problem, but it's obviously a problem. Letting any sort of criminal enterprise that's organized gain a foothold, excuse me, in an area or a community is generally not good, right? Yeah. But the big thing is the understanding that it is a couple complexes. At first, I thought it was purely sensationalism until I saw that Mayor Kaufman had gone out and talked about how it is a couple of complexes now that they know of that are under Venezuelan gang control. And then there was one other thing. The other thing that I wanted to like just briefly mention is this is the kind of stuff that I have to go back and find out what episode it was that we did where I specifically mentioned how this is one of my concerns with what's going on with the border. You have what is believed now, the latest numbers that I've heard that are believed now. This is obviously you have to be careful when you're listening to this stuff because it could be like telephone. Rumored to be around 20 million illegals that have entered the U.S. in just the last couple of years. And my concern that I voiced in that discussion that we had was that like you have all these illegals that are undocumented. They don't have any way of really tracking them once they get across the border and they're outside of line of sight. Gangs like this could be forming like outside of any major town or city or any just like town or city or in them across the country. And if there are influences on these groups, like we know, as far as like what we just talked about with Operation Gladio, with Operation Ajax, the Iran-Contra debacle, what happened with the Cold War of like us creating the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and ISIS and MS-13. If this stuff is happening, then there's a likelihood that like these individuals that like these groups that are being created by this nefarious group of the intelligence community, whether it's ours or whether it's a foreign enemy or a domestic enemy, this is a very serious attack vector of where like maybe Aurora, they're just kind of like testing to see how effective their strategies are, to see where they can get power wrangled from the actual police and what kind of pressures they can exert on the populace. And it could be repeated. Yeah. I'm not suggesting it is, but this is something that people need to be concerned about. And luckily we're in the United States, so we have the Second Amendment. So maybe start, you know, get a firearm and be prepared to actually defend your home.
Yeah, this one struck a chord with me because at first I was like, all right, here we go. Like this is going to get a ton of national attention. There's obviously something is going on here. But I think for the most part, this was a giant psyop after kind of digging into this story. So I flashed up this from USA Today. Police chief says Colorado apartment not being taken over by Venezuelan gangs despite viral images. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, police chiefs are political animals. They are appointed by a mayor. And, you know, to make that mayor look good, you got to say the right things. And one of the things that you need to say is, hey, no, we don't have Venezuelan gangs taking over apartment complexes. So I think you got to be real careful with everything that's out there these days, obviously fifth gen warfare. But I think this was one of those that was illicitly put out there, you know, to stir something, right? And it got huge national attention.
Yeah.
You know,
rapidly.
For anybody to be like, you know, like almost like a honeypot of, you know, like let's see everybody. And I think, you know, for the most part, I think Twitter is a giant honeypot. So if like if you want to feed into their targeting system, you know, by all means do. If not, then be careful. But I think everybody who, you know, took the bait and they ran with it and they're like, yeah, man, this is happening. And then you add to that the fake story about the Hell's Angels coming out to restore order out there. I think that was another one. I think that was one of those things where they're like, all right, now let's see who's going to bite on this. And so we bite on this a little bit. Come to find out, you know, there's this one guy that, you know, does some very, you know, just kind of bootstrap type of reporting, who went to the apartment complex. He lives in Aurora. And so he drove over there and he starts interviewing people. He speaks fluent Spanish and he, you know, he met with some guys and, you know, different kind of some different responses from different, you know, guys, but there are Venezuelans in that complex. And that's not, you know, that's not not normal. It's just one of those things where, hey man, these guys all maybe come from the same area. There's something in common. They share a prior nationality. It happens all the time. It happened with the Irish. It happened with the Italians, you know, back in the 1800s here in the States. It's been happening for eons and eons and eons, where you have, you know, somewhat of a small balkanization of an area, right? Like this is just a couple complex. And so this guy talks to, you know, the guys that are there. Are they Venezuelans? Yes. Do they feel like they're in danger? No.
That makes me feel a lot better.
Yeah. Are there armed Venezuelans, you know, standing in windows or, you know, on the catwalks or anything like in between? And, you know, no, like these guys, like there's no sign of this anywhere. And that kind of just speaks to the idea, like be real careful out there these days. There's going to be a lot of trumped up sensationalism. I think a lot of it is to see where you're at and to further, you know, add to the data collection on you specifically.
Yeah. And moves and counter moves.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, who's doing what? Who's excited about this idea of Hell's Angels going out there and, you know, fucking up some gang, right? Like, you know, and a lot of people were, right? A lot of people, like I was like, this is going to get real hairy real fast. But
yeah, that was like my primary concern when I saw that. Like, I didn't do my due diligence. I saw the Hell's Angels. I shared it with our group. And I didn't do any more digging, and I definitely should have, but like, cause like my biggest concern was, whether it was real or not, to your point,
right.
It produces environments, like whether it's real or it's fake, both of them produce environments to where, you're increasing the likelihood for very poor decision-making to be occurring. Right.
Yeah.
Cause like, it's like say like let's go with the reality of the, like it was a psyop. Then you have like people both across the country and in the Aurora area that are high strung, that are likely running off of an increased threshold of fear, because they don't know if they have to deal with, you know, gang on gang violence now or the establishment of territories. You don't want to have to deal with that in your area, which just you're dealing with the high strung nature of that. Like it's going to influence your decision making from day to day, which could impact sleep. There's a lot of things that can come out of that. But then if it was real, then you are dealing with a potential likelihood of a U.S. town becoming a battlefront for like actual gang territory violence. Right. And then you're looking at what happened. What was it? The L.A. riots in the 70s.
Yeah.
And you're looking at situations like that. And you mix that with like everything we've talked about around this doom porn today, around like the uncertainty and confusion around what the path ahead for the U.S. looks like. Because to Eric Weinstein's point, to everybody else's point that we've all talked about for the last couple of weeks, we don't know who's making the decisions. That's a problem. That's problem number one, right? So we don't know what even the trajectory is for the next couple of months going to the election is going to look like. We don't know what after the election is going to look like. We don't know what the decision making is from the Federal Reserve is going to look like. We don't know the health of the U.S. dollar is going to look like. We don't know all of these things. So like in that confusion, there's a vacuum of possibility and power, right? And we're like this Hell's Angels thing's like if it was real, like I worded it as like the powder keg is getting set, right? Because what if like I was saying before, like what if we get more towns where stuff like this is happening, but it's kept quiet and it's not pushed into the zeitgeist to see like what kind of outcomes we could get from, you know, outrage Twitter picking it up and running with it like a hit of a drug, like kind of like I did, right? Because yeah. There's just a lot of issues that we all need to be aware of. And just to wrap it up, like you and I have both talked about it, like neither of us are perfect, right? So like we're gonna get wrapped up, we're gonna get like I'm gonna get picked up on, like I'm gonna pick up something that may not like smell right or whatever. I haven't taken the time to sniff it and pass the test, but
you passed it to a guy that did. And I think that's, you know, that is just part of the duality of man, right? Like,
yeah,
there's this weird thing, you know, and Mike and I have had some, you know, pretty amazing experiences together. And I think the duality of man is one of those underlining, takeaways from some of those amazing experiences is, you know, there's the good and bad, there's the dark, the light, all these things. And, you know, this forum that we talk to each other on, whether it's Twitter or any of those things, is the ability for information to move fast is, yeah, I think, both good and bad, right?
Fast and free.
Right. The great thing is if it can move fast, then it's got a greater chance of being debunked fast if it's false. And having, you know, somebody go, no, that's not right. And then that, you know, pervasion. And there's, you know, the old adage that, you know, you can convince, you know, people of the greatest lie in the world before the dawn, you know, or whatever it is. I'm totally messing up this quote. Basically, a lie will make it around the world, you know, long before the truth gets out of bed. And at any rate,
yeah.
So with that being said, now that it's so fast, the lie can get out fast, but I'm going to tell you, you know, the army that's backing up the truth now, that's substantial. Right. There's a lot of people out there that are like, you
know,
it's not
the organized army.
No, it's a decentralized, you know, 8 billion people. And I know that not that many people are on Twitter, but, you know, you start to look at numbers and you go, wow, man, you're like, yeah, one person can tell a lie. One person can gin up, you know, whatever they need to try to like excite the masses or move the masses and all those things. But somebody comes along and goes, you know, like, hey, I'm actually here right now. I've got my phone. I'm recording this. I'm putting it out. Somebody gets a hold of it. Now, as soon as somebody else gets a hold of this, we can dispel and debunk that thing as quick as we can. And yep, that is definitely sped up. So, you know, be careful. I think that's a lesson out there. But, you know, don't be afraid to make mistakes, because, you know, making mistakes, especially if you're asking the question, hey, is this actually happening? Instead of like, this is definitely happening, let's go get with the Hell's Angels and grab your boys and like, let's get out to Aurora and, you know, take on these Venezuelans, right? Like,
yep.
It's much better to have the outcome that we have now where we're like, you know what, this is actually seems like a psyop and we're just.
Well, and there's also like, just to briefly touched on, like, don't be afraid to make mistakes. It's like, establish a hierarchy or think through like a hierarchy of like mistakes. Yeah. Right. Like, you don't want to make the mistake of pulling a trigger that you shouldn't have. Right. Yeah. Like, be afraid of that mistake. But when it comes to information, like, make the mistakes.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I just wanted to touch on that, because like, we also don't want people making the mistake of not having the capability to defend their family when they could have.
Yeah.
So
should we move on to the favorite part of the show?
Story time. Ooh. I hope you have a story, because I am not great at stories. So, and oftentimes my stories are state dependent, and a lot of my stories involve alcohol.
I was actually going to do this a little bit differently tonight.
Okay.
Old Lex Freeman had on Donald Trump for a sit, and one of the questions he asked him was about Epstein. Let's have a listen.
But a lot of big people went to that island. But fortunately, I was not one of them.
It's just very strange for a lot of people that the list of clients that went to the island has not been made public.
Yeah, it's very interesting, isn't it? Probably will be, by the way.
So if you're able to, you'll be...
Yeah, I'd certainly take a look at it. Now, Kennedy's interesting because it's so many years ago. You know, they do that for danger, too, because, you know, it endangers certain people, et cetera, et cetera. So Kennedy is very different from the Epstein thing. But yeah, I'd be inclined to do the Epstein. I'd have no problem with it. But a lot of big people went to that island.
I got to stop this.
I'm going to call bullshit, but go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, we only have like 9 minutes left on the show. Yeah, no, I think it's a fantastic story. You know, I don't know. Had he ever gone there? Had he not? I mean, would he have flown his own private plane out there? Possibly. Who knows? Like, he never flew the Lolita Express, never went to the island. I don't know. I know for a fucking fact that his handlers are never going to let him release the Epstein files.
Like, that's the big fat shit emoji that like that was coming up in my mind when like watching and listening to that. I was like, no, you're not.
Absolute bullshit. You know, the one remark that got me in there is like, you know, this puts a lot of people at danger. And I was like, man, if that's the reason not to list out every pedophile that ever went to that island, right? Like anybody who's an associate of Epstein, like because it puts their life in danger. That was weird to me. That was almost like a Freudian slip. And, you know,
if that's the case, then why are we sending soldiers to defend oil?
Yeah. Right.
Like let's call a spade, like that dude. Oh my God. That actually frustrated me. And it frustrates me because I fully expect Republican Twitter and MAGA Twitter to just completely swerve that conversation topic. Like, I mean, they'll, you know, they can pick it up and they can run with it. Like, oh, Trump's going to like release the Epstein files. No, he's not.
No, no way.
If it hasn't been released yet, there's reasons because of the people that are involved.
Yeah.
He's going to get in, see the people that are involved and just, you know, coincidentally or conveniently forget about it.
Yeah, man. You know, Epstein being an Israeli honeypot, you know, the Mossad, you can link this all back to just Lane and her dad, who was like their best spy, ever. I mean, literally, like the guy was honored by everybody in that nation when he died. So, I mean, it doesn't take a lot to put it all together. Yeah, that whole thing's a giant cluster. The fact that nobody has gone to jail. The fact that Elon is out there even saying, hey, we're how many months after Ghislaine's been sitting in a prison and we still don't know one damn person that was on that list.
Oh, we know as a species or maybe as like a country on like the governmental or like the intelligence or law enforcement side. Yeah. But we as a people, we don't know. Right. Like that's the part that like needs to really be. Like Elon used to be like, hey, there are people that know that aren't talking. Like maybe we start squeezing them, like start like honing in on those like organizations or those groups instead of just like shouting out to the wind like a town crier. It's like, we don't know. We don't know. Why don't we know? Like, why don't we know? Like, well, we know people that are like at least holding Ghislaine and have the evidence. It's like, let's start applying pressure to them.
Yeah. Why not, right? Seems like the easy, smart thing to do. But
well, maybe not easy, but it's simple.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you right now, with Ghislaine in custody, or you know, Ghislaine, or however you say her,
say Jizz. It sounds funny.
Ghislaine. Like that's like come on,
destroy her in any way I can.
Yeah. You know, the fact that they've got her in a cell, I'm going to tell you right now. There are some, you know, things that you would probably not even consider, you know, a torturous situation. But, you know, here's the thing. She's also a pedo. Who gives a flying shit, man? Like, get the information and let's go. Like, let's have it out. Obviously, we know why we don't have it. I thought that was a great story by Donald Trump. I think he's absolutely so full of shit. Epstein was literally killed on his watch. Like, he died on Trump's watch, you know, and that's the thing is, do you think he never said anything about it? I think even a couple months ago, he said that, you know, it was, he thought it was a suicide. Dude,
well, like,
no way, man. Not, there's no damn chance on earth that first of all, you don't know as the president of the United States that this billionaire died in prison with no cameras running, no guards have any recollection of what happened. Like, this whole thing is just
like, you watched how the SEAL team got Abu, whatever, Bakari, whatever is, whatever is, like, the, yeah, the Shane Gillis, you know, that's the only reason I can even remember that name. Yeah, like, you watched how they operate and how they do things, and you honestly think that that was just, okay, all right, yeah, well, that I'm either going to call you an idiot or you're full of shit. But, like, the other thing, too, is just, like, what? I don't know, man. It's just, like, it's just complete nonsense.
Yeah. I mean, there's a few things that happened during this. He was talking about releasing UFO files. So this, if you haven't seen parts of this thing, it's don't waste your time. He's saying, hey, I'm gonna release the Kennedy files, which we'll see. UFOs, those are coming apparently as well, and possibly a Joe Rogan podcast. He's like, yeah, you know, I see him at the UFC events, and, you know, no real ill will. We just haven't made anything happen yet, which I don't.
The third one's, I'm going to give it like a 99% probability that's going to happen.
Not,
well, like the first two. No, like, no. No, that's absolutely, like, besides the fact that, like, if you're going to release the JFK files, you're going to literally expose the incompetence and corruption of one of the most effective intelligence agencies known to man, based out of the United States, and how those tentacles, again, through Operation Gladio, touched every single country in the planet at the U.S.'s behest with U.S. funding.
And are surrounding
you're
in real time.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not going to do that. You're not going to do that unless, like, you really do kind of, like, to use your words almost against you, rip the Band-Aid off and cause some serious chaos and conflict within the United States. And nobody who's vying for the presidency is going to do that.
Yeah.
Then the UFO thing, like, you're challenging, like, if you're going to release those files, you're taking away a lot of power from Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, Northrop Grumman, Halliburton, even though they're, like, I mean, they're oil, but they're in energy. Then you're dealing with all the energy producers, right? Mm-hmm. Like Shell, ConocoPhillips, BP, all them. You're going to piss off all of them with the UFO stuff, because one of the main reasons for UFOs is the energy generation. You're not releasing those files.
No,
the only way it gets done is, like, somebody actually leaks them, like, online, and they get put on something like the Bitcoin network. Yeah. To where you can just see the files. Nobody's doing that.
I'm getting to the point where I think Trump knows there's not going to be an election. I think he knows that, like, nothing that he says is going to come to fruition, because he's not going to have to. And I think
he's playing the game.
He's just sitting there playing the game, saying whatever the hell he thinks he can say and get away with it. And
he's giving people what they want.
Yeah. Like, well, so yeah.
Without actually giving them what they want.
Yeah.
He's giving them what they want to hear.
Yeah.
And, perfect politician.
Well, and you know, that's the thing, is if he does get arrested in September, what is it? September 18th. I think that's when he's supposed to have the, man, who's doing that? Jesus Christ. Excuse me. Somebody it's probably Gary calling me from backstage. Yeah, he is. He's giving us the birds. You want in or not? Yeah, he wants in now. Here we go. Yeah. Welcome back, Gary.
Hey, answer my phone call.
We're still live.
I tuned into this Bitcoin podcast and you guys are talking about politics and their genitals or something. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. I thought this was a Bitcoin podcast.
If we talk long enough, we can make the politics and the genitals, like, actually make sense.
Yeah, all we got to do is go back to, like, 1998, Bill Clinton monolith.
Yep. There you go.
The original Hawk Tua. The original Hawk Tua. Right? Not a lot of people knew that there were Hawk Tua going on in those pictures of Mr. Clinton.
Yeah. Let's close this thing out. You know, Gary's here. He's making calls and coming in, and we're getting way off subject into weird places.
Yeah, we'll end up ranting for another 3 hours.
Yeah. Any closing remarks, Mike?
Just if you're coming across information or news like the Hells Angels things, just share it with a friend like I did with Shane, and just get somebody else's eyes on it and like check your fear or your excitement real quick. That's what I would say, because we're gonna have a lot more stuff like that going forward. Like, I thought the Trump assassination thing was one of those, and it ended up being legitimate and real, and we've already forgotten about it. So we're going to need a lot more due diligence and decentralization of information for at least the next couple of months.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a great way to validate your information, Mike, is there's two things that AI can't fake. They can't just create, and that's a digital signature, and that's proof of work. Bitcoin has both of those. And then Nostr has the signatures, and Nostr is a communication protocol. It's not a platform, it's a protocol, just like the internet is a protocol.
Yep.
But it has digital signatures. So as long as you know that I'm safeguarding my key and I'm sending you a Nostr event, you can be rest assured that I was signing that, right? Now, if you think I was compromised, then now it's invalid. But it's building a cryptographic web of trust, and we're doing it with shitposts and memes. So come join us on Nostr if you haven't yet.
Love the plug.
Those are my closing thoughts there, Shane. So
I appreciate it. No, thanks for showing up late and coming in here and dropping all sorts of fun stuff. We are Bitcoiners. We're veterans. This is Bitcoin Veterans. Been a hell of a good time hanging out with you, Mike and Gary. You know, sorry you couldn't get here later. And we're going to do this next week. We may have Alex Svetsky on the show next week. You know, it's been scheduled and rescheduled quite a few times. You know, no fault of Alex's by any stretch. But if you want to get involved with Bitcoin Veterans, you don't have to be a veteran. You can get a hold of us at bitcoinveterans.org, and we will plug you into the chats and find a space for you and put you on the mission. Like I said, there's no greater gift on earth than having a passion and a mission that you can follow out there. And this is one of the brightest, best, well-incentivized crews that you will ever know. And I got to tell you, it's been a benefit to my life, my whole family, and the friends and brothers that I've made through this is just incredible. So to everybody out there that is working behind the scenes and that still loves the idea of America, man, this is the place to be. Thank you guys for tuning in to Bitcoin Veterans. We will see you next week. Peace.